Oh shit, I've been waiting for this drink. I'm not gonna lie to you. It has been one of those weeks without a doubt, and this is Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me as always is Nathan. It's a surprise, surprise, everybody. Scotch once more. Nathan, what is the beer of the month? Are you actually gonna try to drink the French shit?
No, like I said, I actually poured that one from last week down the drain because it was terrible. Like I said, it was like drinking menthol and cough syrup that was carbonated.
Oh, wait,
Ugh.
hold on, hold on. You know, we shouldn't talk about alcohol so much on this show.
You're
We
right.
have had complaint.
Indeed.
Apparently all
Complaint.
they do is talk about how much they drank. Yeah, that's very fair for the first 3 minutes of the show, at
Well, you
most.
know, maybe. He never got through that part because, you know, if he listens to some other podcasts, and I'm not going to even say gaming podcasts, but, you know, the ones that have like 20 minutes worth of advertisements for their sponsors at the beginning, and he just thinks we're promoting booze.
We're promoting booze and scotch and alcoholism.
Maybe.
Awesome.
But
Hey,
listen,
I'll get behind that.
it is a lifestyle choice. It really is. But no, I have, and first of all, I want to say, did you know that some breweries make beer bottles in a liter form? Because I have one with me now.
Ooh.
A whole liter of beer. So if I start, you know, getting slurry and throwing punches at the microphone, everyone knows why. But
Well,
yes.
I've said before. For our year anniversary show, it's going to be the 40 or the
Oh.
bottle of shit liquor, and the show does not end until it is gone.
Yeah, but you know, that is a really good way to kill all of our listener base because I don't think
Oh,
anyone wants to listen to it.
but it would be so good, and you know that you're not going to be that bad off. Come on,
Oh,
we're
it's
talking about
true.
like Sourpuss and Hypnotic and shit like that.
It's
Anyways.
true.
Nathan will do it if everybody just calls him a pussy for not doing it. So let's get on to the show here.
Yay.
Let's get into what you've been working on this week. I personally been working on my car and painting up Strange Aeon stuff for the next weekend when I'm going to be in Cowtown there, and probably try to bring that up, and maybe if we can get a game or two in, that ought to be pretty fun. I plan on stopping by Uncle Mike's to pick up a couple more things as well.
Nice.
So that is what I have been working. Oh, and I'm putting together my ogre stone monster crusher
Thing.
thing.
Stonehorn.
The Stonehorn. Yes, I'm putting together a Stonehorn. That
Cool.
is my current modeling situation. Nathan, what's up with you?
Well, I started painting one of my Strange Aeon dudes, and then I put him to the side and started painting a Great Unclean one because he's epic and nurgly, and I wanted to paint green instead of grays and blacks.
Yes.
So I've been working on him, and I'm also gonna play a couple games, or at least one game tomorrow. Bust out my demons against
Awesome.
some high elves.
Awesome.
Should be some good times.
All right. So for higher learning this week, the topic is going to be speed painting, or speed modeling. For tournaments is usually kind of where this falls into place, but it doesn't always have to be the case. In a lot of situations, people are going to, if you've been in the hobby for a few years, have a backlog of any number of different types of armies that you've wanted to do or you've purchased that you were going to do and you were gung-ho for it, but you didn't get all the way through it. That's where these kinds of tips and tricks can come into play. I know I've done this before as well. If you guys have anything else that you'd like to share on the Facebook page or something like that, by all means, go from there. But I think really for me, the big thing is just cutting off the baubles. I fucking hate them. I hate skulls hanging from shit. I hate feathers. I hate fucking little flags. I hate like any opportunity that I have to just nip those little fuckers off of the models and just have them be like a lot cleaner without all that little dangly shit. I am that much happier. And I've gotten so far into the habit of doing that like I start looking at new boxes going like, all right, what can I cut off of here? Like with the freaking the monster for the ogres, as soon as I looked at the picture of it and the box of it, I was just like, I don't know about that model, man. Oh, but I could cut that off and I could cut that off. Yeah, I could totally cut that off. Ooh, I could use that guy as a demon host in the future because you get that little empire guy hanging from a hook all wrapped up.
Nice.
Yeah, you could totally convert him into like a wicked awesome demon host.
Just wait for the next edition when they suck less. Maybe. They might not. I mean, they might get nerfed more.
They're probably just going to ignore that they ever existed. Who knows, man?
Squat treatment. Classy.
Squat treatment. Where rattlings are going. Are going and gone. Are they gone now?
Rattlings? No, I think rattlings are still in this codex, but the fact that there is no new model for them, newer than second edition 40K, is kind of telling.
Yeah, the fact that you have to have a unit of truckers with sniper rifles, with hunting rifles, is kind of... Hobbit truckers with hunting rifles. No. But, like, that's the biggest thing for me. And I find that does save me an enormous amount of time, kind of going in with a lot of other tips and tricks that I use as well. But that's my primary one. My primary one is just cutting off the fucking bullshit and just keeping, like, this very trimmed down model. Like, you used to see a lot in Games Workshop kits, like Empire State Troops and High Elf Spearmen and stuff like that, where they would give you, like, feathers and, you know, spikes and little things to put on the shields and all this extra stuff. Like, I've got an entire bits box full of untouched sprues of all of those little extras. Because I refuse. Like, I don't want it. I don't think it makes the model look any better to have them. And I don't think it makes it look any worse not to have them. Especially a big ass fucking pirate feather coming out of my head. But maybe that's just me. I mean,
next you're gonna say you didn't like the poofy sleeved Empire soldiers.
Well, I mean, I don't want to upset the feather and poofy sleeve enthusiasts that listen to the show.
Hi, Mark.
But fuck them. No, I mean, it's just there's nothing to it for me. And like I said, I find that it does save a lot of time. And I've never gone into a tournament where somebody said to me, like, hey, you're missing the feathers. Nobody cares. Nobody even notices half the time. So that's my trick number one. So before I get into the rest of my stuff, I'll what do you got, Nathan?
Well, I mean, for me, you know, with modeling, that's about it. Because with modeling, the more crap, the more extraneous shit is on your models, the more time that is going to take when painting. The other thing that I like to do is, if I'm really in a hurry, is cheat with removing mold lines. Try not to do it, basically. So, I mean, for example, with Tyranids, which has been, I think, the only army that I have mass and speed painted en masse, like hundreds of guys.
Yep.
A lot of them, there's always a big mold line going right down their back. But I would never remove it off the carapace, simply because it was right dead center and it would kind of raise it up. So whenever possible, if I could cheat on the assembly and not have to remove the mold line, I'd just leave it. But the key to that is being able to look at it and say, would this be obvious if I didn't take it off? Keeping that same mold line, as soon as it left the carapace and got onto, like, the flat, smooth skin of the tail, you have to take that shit off. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise it looks weird, especially if you're going to dry brush. Because when you dry brush over a mold line, it just, picks it up and highlights it for the world to see.
It was the same thing with my lizard men, is I would try to leave the mold lines in as much as possible and just kind of clean them off in the really obvious places. And because I did the entire army in inks, I knew you do have to kind of have the eye for where is this mold line appropriate to kind of leave it. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, with that, Games Workshop, with the same thing in mind, a lot of their newer kits tend to hide the mold lines really, really well, unless it's fine cast, in which case you're going to be fighting with the mold lines
And the bubbles and the deformities. And
you don't want to take too much off, and you could accidentally take a chunk out, and yada, 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 yada. But
basically, if you are going to, from a modeling perspective, if you are going to have to speed paint, speed build and speed paint an army in short order to make it for a tournament, do not include fine cast models. I think that's that is the best advice I could give you, because... it's the highest quality miniatures that
so true.
Yeah.
The other modeling side of it would be just flock or static grass. Mm-hmm. Like don't get all sassy with your bases. Anybody who's seen my recent armies knows that I don't even try. When it comes to the bases, like I feel like you see an army where all the bases have like snow on them, like your demon army. It looks very nice. But that's because the entire army has all the same stuff. To me, if I see an entire army that's all just flock, I'm just as happy with that. Like it doesn't stand out to me to have like this over the top basing. So if you are going for speed, then definitely just flocking it and painting the rim of the bases is a hell of a lot easier than anything else.
Although for those like me that despise flock, because I
Yes,
do, I just
you
hate the
hate
look
it.
of it.
Yes.
Glue the sand on or whatever medium with it, you know, because I've stopped using sand, I like to use the coarse pumice gel now. But either way, if you can put that in on the model while you are building it before you prime it, you'll save yourself boatloads of work because then you just do a quick prime over top, and then it's a simple matter of grabbing your tank brush out when the model's painted, going over with a base color. Dry brushing it once that's dry, later you've moved on to a different model.
Yeah, see, but you're talking about like 3 steps, whereas I'm just like 1 step.
It's
That's
totally
speed.
true. But
Speed.
again, it depends. Speed be damned, I hate flock. Actually, the only army I ever just flocked, I didn't even paint a color under the flock. I was just like, yeah, black base plus flock was my Lord of the Rings compliance army.
Ooh, the compliance army. I
Yes.
remember that.
Oh, David, you need a 500-point Lord of the Rings force.
If I remember correctly, when we were working in the store together at that time, I think you said something specifically like, "I hate this army so much, I'm flocking it." You
Yes.
were just like, "No, I'm flocking it because I fucking hate it, and as soon as I don't need to have this army anymore, it is going in the trash." And like that was why you flocked it.
You're absolutely right.
Out of spite.
I also tried to get as few models as possible. So I flipped through all the Lord of the Rings books and went like, "Ooh, elves are expensive."
Yes.
And then I went digging through the bits box, grabbed like four heroes. So it was just like one box of elves, these four heroes. There's
Duh.
500 points.
Yeah.
Flock. Done. I'm
Oh, Lord
compliant.
of
Shut
the
the fuck up.
Rings. So I guess the other speed painting side of things, just kind of knowing your inks. I think that inks are really good for like your highlights and to kind of get the looks that you need on models with a certain amount of restraint. But I'll say from personal experience, trying to do a project army that was 90% inks did teach me a lot about how to mix inks and where to layer them and what kind of effect you can get from layering them very heavily. And so if I were to paint an army very quickly in the future, I do have a much better grasp on like how quickly I can ink something. And I mean, like, you can talk about dipping, and dipping's not terrible. I don't feel like I know people always bitch where they're just like, "Oh, so a dipped army should get as many points as a..." No, fuck it. It's done. I don't care if you dipped it. I don't care what you did with it. Like if you got the desired effect, great. It's more about just having a nice complete army that you're happy with. Fine. Let your opponent rank you, rank your painting score however you want. Like you're not trying to win best painted with a dipped army,
Yeah, you're right. I don't know though. I would personally caution people away from ink simply because it's not a beginner's painting style. I mean, it is fast, and if you know what you're doing, you know how to ink, you know how the inks will react to your base coat color. Then you can go like smoke and finish an army, but it's just like if you're just kind of like, hey, this is like my first army or my second army, and I'm gonna speed paint it and play in this tournament, stay the fuck away from doing like a predominantly inked army. At that point, I would recommend dry brushing.
Yeah, well, I mean,
Because I think dry brushing gives much the same effect as inks. I mean, it's exact opposite, right? An ink is
Right.
gonna shade, whereas a dry brush is gonna highlight. But I think the dry brushing is a little more idiot proof.
Yes, I agree, but I also would say that I think we can both agree on the fact that I don't recommend that anybody speed paint their first army.
No.
I think your first army, give it the love and attention that it needs. You don't have to go crazy. But don't look for tips and tricks on getting stuff done. I feel like your first army, you should put in the time, really kind of get it to a place that you're happy with. I've seen so many horror stories of people who have tried to speed through their first army using, over the counter spray paints and like textured paints. There was a kid who came in with you remember that? There's a kid
I
who came
know.
in with like $400 worth of Chaos Space Marines
No, they were
and.
Chaos Warriors and a dragon,
Yes, it was
dude.
Chaos Warriors and a Dragon. And he wanted to speed through it. Like he didn't want to paint it, but he wanted it to be playable. So he had gone out and he had bought like that foam textured spray paint, like if you were gonna texture something with like a stipple effect, right? And he had sprayed all of his Chaos Marines with it and then painted their swords gold. But this shit is not meant for painting. And it completely filled in all of the details, and these things just looked like balls of Play-Doh. It was like if I had tried to recreate a Chaos Warrior with Play-Doh. and I had, mashed it all together. Like, they were ruined. And I don't even know if you could strip this stuff, but they were ruined. And he came in and I looked at this. I said, why would you do this? And he says, I don't know. And his mom was there too. And his mom says, yeah, why the hell would you do this? We just spent $400 on this stuff. And he's like, I don't know. And that was all he would say. He said it five times. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, that was half of his army. The other half, he just dipped in white glue and then dipped in static grass, which was hilarious. Yes, he
static grassed the freaking Galmarok or whatever his name is, the twin-headed dragon.
Oh yeah, Galmarok.
had been dipped in static grass. Like, it was just this was like he wanted it to be done, and for some idea, this was his idea of done, and like that's what people get into their heads. Like, he just kept saying, "I don't know, I don't know, I don't know," but it was clear that the kid just
wanted to play, and this was the era where GW had standards.
That's what I was getting to. It was the era when GW had standards and required that any army brought in on a vet's night had to be painted to play in the store, right? Now, of course, that's not the case, and we do see how vet's night works. It's not so bad at some places.
It's amateur night, you know.
Exactly, amateur night.
But I mean, like I said, for me, if I was going to give tips, because I mean, even then with the first armies, I find that a lot of people do speed through their first army regardless, simply because they want to play the game. They want to play in tournaments. They want to have that army available. And it's usually the second army that people take a lot of time on. And, because the first army is the playable army. The second army is the showpiece army.
Right.
I find for a lot of players. But, regardless of...
It's for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was for me. I mean, God, my Tyranids have been through how many iterations, and each one is always my worst painted army that I have available.
Yes.
Hey, I can play tournaments with them. So, while I'm working on something else, if a tournament comes up, bam, my Tyranids are there. I can grab them, I can play, do whatever. But I would recommend, do a little bit of pre-planning. First of all, obviously know what you want in your list so you can build it. But beyond that, have an idea of a paint scheme that you want and make it simple. Don't just, don't be like, I'm going to speed paint my Marines, so I've decided I'm going to quarter them, and all the assault Marines are going to be like orange and blue, and then the tactical Marines are going to be red instead of orange. And, that shit is too complicated.
Yeah.
Come up with a simple, simple, simple color scheme. Like, honestly, 95% of my color choice for armies is looking at a color wheel, picking a color I want to paint, looking at the exact opposite of the color wheel and saying, these will look good as a contrast together. That is my army.
Yeah.
I have two colors. I'm just going to fucking give her at that point, and I'm going to paint it up. Or beyond that, you could even cheat and stay in dark colors. Bright colors take more time to paint. So it's just like, have a plan. And beyond that, if you're going to keep it simple, use those shortcutting techniques. Dry brush, ink, do washes, do all of these things, whether that's, you're going to buy those army painter dips where it's just like, no, my guardsmen, I want them to wear khaki. So I'm going to airbrush the khaki color on. I'm going to put them in that army painter dip, let them dry, and then I'm going to paint the carapace black because it's going to go fast.
I think that that's another good point is airbrushing. Airbrushing a base coat does save you an immense amount of time. It can get you started in the right direction very, very quickly. And to me, whereas Nathan says, for the aesthetic side of things, you look at one end of the color wheel, compare it to the other end and take those two colors as your two contrasting colors. Whereas for me, in a lot of cases, what I tend to do is I tend to look at colors that I can layer towards an end, right? So, for instance, my Talaran army. I spray paint the entire army base coated with graveyard earth, and then I would do various levels up to khaki or up to white or up to yellow or up to silver, to the point where I had to do very, very little in terms of, going back and repainting certain sections of that model black so that I could, do different colors on it. Essentially, with that base coat of graveyard earth, I was able to then highlight up to every other color that I needed for that army. And that helped me to work through those guys very quickly. So, I mean, any of these types of tricks can help people out. I would have to say that from the modeling side, getting your stuff together, usually people don't tend to have a problem with that, but they also tend to get too excited in that point where they're just like, oh, glue on all the baubles and every single one of my space marines will have a knife on them and a little the little packs. I'll glue the packs on. I'll glue the frag grenades on. That's all great on the modeling side, but realize you're going to have to paint that shit later. And that's just you're adding an extra step every time you add on an extra little bauble. So do keep that in mind on the modeling and painting end of things.
Well, especially, yeah, because the baubles always have to be a different color. You can't just blend it in with the armor, with the whatever. But, I mean, honestly, I think depending on the army you're trying to get painted is really going to dictate a lot of the techniques you're going to use. If you're trying to paint orcs en masse or guard, you know, any of the big horde armies, you are going to need an airbrush, you're going to need dips, and you're going to need a dry brush. Because, I mean... Yeah. If I was going to do an orc army in a hurry, that's exactly what I would use. Is I would start with an airbrush, you know, I'd build everything. I would airbrush the green of their skin on. I would do a heavy, like bright dry brush of like scorpion green or some shit like that, like something despicably bright. I just dip them in the army painter dips, let them dry off, because the brown of the dips is going to dull the scorpion green to the point where it doesn't look like shit, and all of a sudden the skin on everything's done. You know, and that's what you have to look at, is if you need to do massive amounts of models, you need to start, you know, expanding your tool drawer, because there's no way you're going to paint, 100 orcs or, you know, 100 guardsmen. Although, who am I kidding? Every guard army only has 6 tanks and no painted infantry, because it's not like they get out.
Wouldn't that be hilarious to see a guard army where it's just tanks and you're just like, oh yeah, there's guys in there. No, I'm never going to deploy them. Assume they die all the time.
I was gonna say, welcome to 90% of every guard army you'll ever play in a tournament.
Fifth edition. All right, so let's move on.
Yay, Robin Credace. Way to fuck up that book too.
Let's move on to the listener challenge for this week. So last week we had asked for the sarcastic review, and we got one. So my favorite was Matt's.
Yes. You know, actually, I am going to assume that the negative one on iTunes saying that we are one of the worst podcasts was sarcastic as well. But that was my favorite.
That was from like months before. I think that was from July.
Oh, that's okay.
I didn't notice it was there until I went back to iTunes to do the sarcastic review type shit.
Yeah.
I'm just like, all right, whatever. I have to laugh. Whatever. Good times. We're fairly clear on the fact that it is not for everybody. No, it is not for everybody. Okay.
Does everyone like the sriracha rooster sauce? No, some people love that shit. Other people can't stand it.
Right.
We're the sriracha rooster sauce of podcasts, and that's where we like to be.
And I have no tolerance for Australians and Vegemite, but hey, we're not going to get into it. Okay, so... let's kind of get into the listener challenge for this week, which is very, very straightforward. I even forget what it's called now. It's Dreadfleet.
Dreadfleet.
So Dreadfleet was released on the 16th of September, and it is a very self-contained high seas.
It is Manowar, but not Manowar. So don't call it Manowar, because it'll just piss off Johnny Kingsway.
It is not Manowar.
So whatever you do, do not go into Kingsway this week and ask them about Manowar.
I may do that. But anyways, like we like to, you know, we like to buy and review everything that comes out from Games Workshop primarily when it comes out. And we're kind of wondering if this is the exception to the rule, because I don't think anybody cares. Like, is there anyone out there who really cares? So kind of the question is, we're going to do a little poll. Yes or no, should we buy it and review it? Do you guys want to hear about it? And then we'll kind of take it and go from there. If enough people say yeah, then we'll probably pick it up. But as Nathan likes to say, goddamn this podcast and what it makes me buy.
Yeah. You know, I don't know, though. You know, I find it very surprising, Lang, that, you know, with Games Workshop's new marketing policy of, you know, surprise, there's product, that you didn't hear the news for Dreadfleet and become so overcome with enthusiasm you couldn't help but buy two. Because that is clearly what they expect everyone to be stupid enough to do. But,
Right.
No, seriously, if you people make me purchase this game, I swear to you that I will pick an episode and I will be drunk going in. And then I will drink more until I pass out. And then Lang is not going to know what the fuck to do. Wait, am I making this more appealing for them? Is this the
Welcome
problem?
Welcome to Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, a drunken sailor.
But seriously, I do not want to play this shitty game. I do not want to have to shell out $130.
Is it $130?
You bet it is. Just to get a bunch of shitty, fine cast pieces of shit boats.
Ow!
That would be mostly crap because it's fine cast. So hey, these boats wouldn't float on account of how many holes are in them.
So why did my entire fleet come riddled with cannonballs?
I don't want anything to do with this. So please, please vote
please,
no.
God,
on the-
vote no.
But anyway, that is the listener challenge this week.
Let's move the fuck
vote on whether or not we have to spend money on Man of War.
Jesus.
That isn't Man of War.
That is not Man of War. All right, so let's get into the topic for today's show. A little bit late, granted, since we did spend a little bit of time on Higher Learning there. This is going to be a bit of a 40K roundup for us, which is going to be looking back at the last few months worth of 40K. So we are going to go back and look at the last three Codex releases for Warhammer 40,000, which was the, of course, most recently the Sisters of Battle. Before that was the Grey Knights Codex, and before that was the Dark Eldar Codex. And we're going to kind of talk a little bit about what's kind of happened in the time since we've talked about these books, and kind of how the metagame has changed and how the, people have seen the rules. Have they found loopholes? Of course, if you listen to the show way back, you'll remember we were very excited for the Dark Eldar. We thought the Dark Eldar were very balanced, very good, very good.
Episode two, bitches.
Episode two. Which is kind of staggering. It's a long time ago. Like, they've only come out with two other, well, technically one.
One and a half.
One and a half codex since then? Jesus Christ. Okay, so let's start with the Dark Eldar. When the Dark Eldar came out, it was a breath of fresh air because we had these very, very innovative, cool models, awesomely sculpted, awesomely designed. The rule book was very interesting. It had a lot of options. And at the time, there was still a very, very wide range of models that had yet to be released for this army when it was originally released with mm-hmm. the Codex. We didn't have the Talos, the Kronos.
Basically, the heavy support slot released you a Ravager. For fast attack, they released Hellions and Reaver jet bikes, which are excellent. Those are both fantastic models and really good choices. Mm-hmm. For troops, they did give you both of your troops options as well as your basic raider transport. For elites, they released Incubi, which are, they're Incubi. What more can you say?
Right.
And Mandrakes. And for HQ, they gave you like two or three choices. So,
there were witches in there, weren't there not?
Yeah, witches are one of the troops choices, right. Witches and warriors. Mm-hmm. But, so it's just like... they came out with this book, and to this day, I still feel that it is the most well-written book Games Workshop has ever released for any game system. Not even looking at it from a fluff perspective, where the fluff is excellent, because you took an army that had like seven pages of scattered fluff throughout, different codexes and all
right.
that, to really fleshing out this really interesting side to the Eldar army. But if you look at it from a sheer just list building perspective, it had so many options, and I truly feel that every single choice in there, except for Mandrakes, is excellent.
You're like going just, a little Domo Arigato, Mr. Roboto, right there for a second. For some reason.
I apologize.
I don't know if it's your connection or my connection, but yes, exactly. I'm going to talk I'm going to talk until our connection comes back.
I guess you interrupted me. You also, Mr. Mary Domo Arigato, but hey, you're recording, so no one will hear that. But,
I'm going to have to say that it's Skype more than anything else. It's starting to come back, though. But yes, essentially, with the Dark Eldar book, what we saw was a very, very cool dynamic between the fluff, the models, and the rules. We got to see some very interesting things that connected all of them together in a very, very cool way. The rules for the pain tokens and things of that nature were all very innovative. And they gave you enough stuff that gave you various ways of building them. Now, we were all very optimistic. So if we kind of jump forward now to where we are now, almost a year later, it seems as though this army really has not risen to the level that we had expected that it would. It's competitive. I don't think anyone's going to argue that it's not competitive, but it's not going toe-to-toe with Space Marines like you would expect. I sneezed because of my rage with regards to this particular codex, because it's rage done so sneezed. Well, and it's so balanced that it does not fit into an edition where every other codex is imbalanced. I think that is what I've taken away from this.
Well, I mean, the thing with the Dark Eldar Codex is, you know, I think Kyle said it best, and I can't remember whether he said it on episode two way, way, way back when, but it is the best fourth edition Codex Games Workshop has released, because inherently the problem is this came out, you know, middle of fifth edition, you know. It's not like we've moved on to a new edition or anything. But basically, they've created this army, and it has all of the tools it needs, and it really does. You can build anything. You can make sure you have a tool for every situation. But they have no very reliable anti-tank weapon. Because when you break it down, what are the most competitive builds when you go to a tournament? They're all mech builds, whether that's mech space wolves, whether it's a razor spam or a mech guard parking lot. But whatever it is that you look at, it's all going to be mechanized lists. You know, you look at Tony Kapach, who's won, Nova 2 years in a row and Adepticon. I mean, right. You know, and every one of these that he runs, he's running a mechanized space wolves list for just tons of guys in rhinos.
Yes, you know? Yes.
And well, the Dark Eldar were not given access to weapons that can reliably destroy this. So when you look at the Dark Eldar Codex, you look at a competitive build, they have the tools, but it comes down to the fucking dice every time. Because it's just like, if you're rolling hot as a Dark Eldar player, when you've crammed in 25 Darklight weapons, you can't lose a game. Because your dice are rolling good, you're rolling hot, you're blowing up every tank you're shooting, you're just going to run the board with it. But if your dice are you know, even just rolling fucking average, you need some ungodly number of darklands, like 14, to blow up a fucking car. So when a guard army, you know, when a guard parking lot is sitting across the board from you, and they're packing easy 2 to 3 Vendettas, along with, you know, 5 to 10 Chimeras and battle tanks, and you're able to blow up one a fucking turn, you cannot win that game.
Right.
You know, and that, I think, is the problem with the Dark Eldar. So, I mean, you are seeing good Dark Eldar players, you know, finishing at the tops of tournaments. But at the end of the day, this is a codex that more than any other in the terms of competitive 40K is entirely dependent on how hot their dice are rolling that day.
Right.
And I think that's the shame of Dark Eldar. Now, if a lot of the rumors for 6th edition are true, I think things will turn around for the Dark Eldar. I think that they will rise, you know, because, you know, if the rumors, when we talked about the rumors, some of them that are really good for the Dark Eldar, like vehicles being hit based on how fast they moved,
mm-hmm.
with very fast-moving Dark Eldar vehicles and very stationary parking lots, it does help even things out more. But we'll have to see how that plays out.
Well, and I think that that's a big thing. You will notice that there is a slight echo, even though that Nathan was taken over by the Borg there for his last comments. You could still understand what he was saying. It was hilarious.
What the fuck is Skype doing to this call?
I think it's actually my internet connection, because I just walked up into my stairwell, and I seem to have a nice proper connection now. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just going to podcast from the stairwell here for a little bit. But
I don't know. You're kind of echoey there.
That's what I'm saying. Let me just stand down here. It's like I'm interviewing myself. I feel like Bob Barker now.
I don't know what to do with my hand. Ah!
What did I lose?
All right, hold on. Slow clap.
Fuck it. I'm going to go back and sit down. Too drunk to be in a stairwell.
Jesus Christ. This has been Jaded GamerCast.
Holy shit.
But no, you know, so like I said, I think
no, I'm good.
Dark Eldar. All right.
Oh, man. Okay, so yeah, Dark Eldar. Let's push past here. and stop focusing on the fact that A, internet sucks, and B, I just dropped my computer down a flight of stairs. Okay.
Well, at least it's still going strong.
It's sturdy. Okay. So yes, I do agree with you. I think the Dark Eldar I think that they are built in such a way that it is kind of a roll of the dice. You don't know what's going to happen in the next few months. When sixth edition comes out, they may come right out on top again. I mean, if Games Workshop has showed anything with the way that they change the editions, is that it essentially does drastically change all of the Xenos armies. Space Marines, they're always going to be on top. They're never going to do anything that's ever going to hurt Space Marines. So don't worry about that if you're a Space Marines player.
Yes.
But for any of the Xenos armies, you are going to be kind of stuck in the mud.
Well, you know, I do think one other interesting thing, even if we're going to step away from rules and, you know, forecasting the future and, you know, divinations and things like that, what I do find very interesting is it is quite clear Dark Eldar exceeded all expectations for sales because they have not been out for one full year yet, and they've had four waves of models.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this because they completely revamped everything and every model got flushed down the toilet, or is it due to sales? Personally, I think it's a little bit of both. Because even if you look at other very, very good sellers, Space Wolves have never received a second wave of models. I mean, I don't even know if they need one. Personally, I don't play Space Wolves. I don't know if there's anything lacking from the range. You know, Blood Angels got, I guess, the short bus counts as a second wave, as well as their Dreadnought. So it's just like they've got two waves of models in a little more than a year. But like I said, I just find it very interesting because you do see certain armies like Imperial Guard have never received a second wave of models. Tyranids have never received a second wave of models. Coincidentally, both Crud Ace books. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Jesus.
Crud Ace!
All right, so let's move on. Let's move on to the Grey Knights here, who also did not get a second wave of releases.
They've been out for like 3 months.
They've been out for a while now. This is one of those armies where it really does seem as though kind of the predictions that we had given were pretty spot on. I think especially yours, Nathan, with regards to how the army was going to be played on a tournament scale very competitively, is that it essentially is just another deploy on the edge of the board firing line where you're just trying to wear your opponent down. I mean, I haven't seen a Grey Knight army in a tournament that hasn't kind of met that role, unless it is a very kind of fluffy, fun type army. But at the same time, like I had said, I have not seen anyone play any of the inquisitorial side of this army yet. When you show up to a tournament and you see somebody show up with Grey Knights, it's all Grey Knights. There's no Inquisition stuff in there at all. I'm not going to say that that's a surprise, but I really feel like we were pretty spot on with our prediction for it and kind of where this was going to go. Mm-hmm. Nothing's really changed. I don't think anyone's found any real like gaps or loopholes or anything like that. And, all of the rock, paper, scissors outcomes have remained the same.
Yeah. You know, I really do feel like Grey Knights are going to be that flavor of the week, you know, because yes, their stuff is good. Grey Knights are a good army. You know, you're right. You're either going to find nothing but Grey Knights or you're going to find nothing but Inquisition. The Inquisition is still broken as shit. You know, it is. You know, so if you play all Inquisition, don't try to lie. Don't lie to my face and tell me that you play for the fluff.
Yes.
Okay. Don't do that. But no, I really do feel like it is, you know, it is kind of the flavor of the week. And I mean, we haven't had a legitimate codex come out since Grey Knights to alleviate a lot of that flavor of the week syndrome. But yeah, you know, I really don't see Grey Knights being a contender for one of the best books in 40K. Because even if you look at it, since the Grey Knight release, the Nova Open, which is probably the second biggest tournament in North America, you know, next to Adepticon.
Right.
There really weren't, you know, Grey Knights weren't really making a splash there. You know, you look at who is at the top, you know, who is at the top tables, and you had, you know, Dark Eldar players, you had Space Wolves players, you had Blood Angels players, you know, but again, Grey Knights just, I don't think that they can compete at the top levels because they just have to pay so many points for all of these fucked up, stupid, over-the-top abilities that they get.
Right.
And at the end of the day, they die like Marines. So if I'm going to build a shooting-based list like a gun line, and let's be honest, a lot of the top lists are very shooting-heavy lists.
Yeah.
You're still killing Grey Knights like they cost, you know, 7, 8, 9 points less. So, you know, you're killing them the same, and the Grey Knights don't have the bodies to weather it.
And that's the truth right there. And I think that there is a certain stigma that comes with playing a Grey Knights army from a certain number of players. I don't think that necessarily it's warranted, but I've seen it with people where somebody might go to put a Grey Knights army on the table and people just kind of groan and moan. Because of the fact that they are so one-sided, you know, either you're setting down to play them and you know 99% you're going to win this because Grey Knights are not meant to beat orcs, or, you know, you sit down at the table and you're the poor bastard playing Eldar and you're just like, right, I can't win this game. You know, like, it's just that I feel like a lot of people kind of look at that army as not fun to play and not fun to play. Right.
Well, you know, and it's interesting, but you're right. Grey Knights do have this killer reputation for being like the douchey broken army. But when I break it down from a strictly math, perspective, when you look at what they are capable of doing, my Tyranids, despite the fact that Tyranids are fucking handicapped against Grey Knights, I don't think I'd ever lose a game. You know, because it's just like at first I was all doom and gloom and I was like, this book is bullshit. It's broken, you know, this and that. But then I look at it and I really just kind of crunch the numbers. And I mean, that's me. I love to crunch the numbers. I love to math. I mean, I build lists crunching the numbers and saying this unit should statistically do this. And I should come out on top every single time. And I think that's the problem, is any good heavy shooting list should come out on top of Grey Knights every single time. You know, because where Grey Knights are going to win the games is when they're going to, you know, just overload and spam on their Psi cannons and their Storm Bolters. Because, I mean, everyone gets the Storm Bolter. Yeah. But, you know, stand on the board edge and have some dumb schmuck, you know, combat army that's going to move 6 and run, then move 6 and run, then move 6 and charge.
Yes.
You know, because that is the game, that is the exact game that Grey Knights are going to win 100% of the time, because they've got this stupid sheer weight of fire from all of their 4-shot Psi cannons and their 2-shot Storm Bolters that they're going to whittle you down to almost nothing, that by the time you get there, all of their other bullshit abilities, whether it be dirt cheap, you know, force halberds to get initiative 6, or whether it be purifiers with cleansing flame, or whatever it be, is just easily going to be able to handle what's left. So if you play any army that isn't, you know, that cookie cutter move 6 run, you know, charge, you should win. You know, you should beat Grey Knights because they're just too expensive, and all of their abilities and all of their points costs have to deal with their offense.
Yep.
Nothing for their defense. So it's just like, you know, you're playing a Marine army that's handicapped 15 guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's Grey Knights.
Yeah, and that's the truth right there. All right, so let's move on to the Sisters of Battle. Obviously, it hasn't been that long since we actually talked about the Sisters of Battle quote-unquote codex. it's just, you know, I think more kind of what I wanted to talk about here and why I felt like we should include this into this little roundup is that I've kind of been able to get out there and talk to people and start to get other people's replies, kind of read online, kind of see what other people are saying. And the truth of the matter is it is resoundingly negative. There are very few people who are just like, oh, I love it. And usually they work for Games Workshop. So I don't tend to take their advice all that much. No. I mean, it's just I understand how people could look at this and say, I like the flavor. I like the Sisters of Battle. I think that they're very cool. You know what? Hey, good for you. I think that that's totally fine. However, the majority of, you know, people that I talk to who are very competitive and tournament goers have all kind of looked at this book and said, you know, like, there's no real way to make this really competitive. Like, it really, really does just feel like they've taken what's there and they've kind of turned it on its head in such a way that, you know, if you were hardcore into them before, you might say like, oh, this is new. But anyone else looking at them thinking like, oh, maybe I should build a Sisters army, or, you know, I've always kind of had an interest in them, but you know, I was never really quite sure because I was kind of waiting for something. It's turned those people off. I think the people who are hardcore into playing Sisters of Battle are always going to play them, and they're going to look at this and say, like, yeah, we can make this work. I was at the bottom before. I don't care. I think that, you know, it's very disappointing to see Games Workshop put this out. I mean, good for them. I still think it's great that they put it out in the White Dwarf. And those White Dwarves I picked up and I actually quite enjoyed. But it's just, it really, really does fall short of what we've kind of come to expect for 5th edition. If you do compare it to, and this is why we started it in this order, if you compare it to the Dark Eldar and you compare it to the Grey Knights, it is so minimal and it's so pathetic that, you know, it really doesn't feel like a codex. It still to this day just does not feel like a proper codex.
No, and I mean, it doesn't, because really, this is the first codex since Codex Necrons back in what, not 2000?
That was 2001, somewhere.
Okay, so the first codex in a fucking decade to have one troop's choice.
Yes.
And this was released in an edition where 66% of your games are one-off troop's choices.
Yep.
And just as a bigger fuck you to Sisters players, because they haven't been fucked hard enough anyway, your basic troop's choice goes up 1 point in cost for absolutely no increase in effectiveness.
Well, no. Nathan, no. You get a 6+ invulnerable save.
Hey, which means that the next time you were playing it at Grand Tournament Calgary or Conflict Calgary circa 2004, when there is absolutely no terrain on a 4x6 board other than one thing of razor wire.
Yes.
You are laughing.
Then you're loving life.
You are. No, but I mean, like, that's the thing. It's just like, you know, I'm paying more points for a neutered, you know, universal special rule being, you know, faith. You know, you've completely fucking neutered it, making it so that I have less of it and it's harder to use. And
it's random.
And it's random is all shit. And I get a 6+ invulnerable, which in this edition is meaningless because every single board you play on should be a minimum of 25% scenery.
Yep.
You're pulling cover saves from fucking everything.
Yeah, units in front of you.
Yeah, units in front of you give you cover. Him shooting through, you know, past a piece of terrain gives you cover. Like, it doesn't matter. You're getting a 4+ cover save at all times. So what did they do? They gave you frag and crack grenades and a pistol, so that way when you never engage in a close combat, which you never will, because you're first. Fucking Sisters of Battle, you could fire your pistol and charge into cover and still strike last because you're initiative 3. Booyah!
It's worth a point, I guess. Well, like, I compared it.
And this is when everything's getting cheaper, though. Like, that's the thing. It's just, like, every single troops across the board, except for the Space Marine that went up 1 point to get all of his gear, but every troop from every fucking codex has gotten cheaper, and then they make these bitches more expensive.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
And we fully expect the Necrons to be cheaper as well.
Well, I mean, rumor has it Necrons are no longer going to be a Marine army that stands back up.
That is the rumor, yes.
You know, so they should get cheaper, because unless Matt Ward wants no one to play the Codex, 18.4+ save model.
Yeah,
go for it.
They're going to be quite a bit cheaper. But yes, and I think that kind of comes down to what we're seeing in the Sisters of Battle book is everyone who looked at the book, especially people who currently played that army, they saw, for instance, the Immolator. And they said, well, why is the Immolator still as expensive as it is? Like, why can't I why can't I get a Razorback? You know, why can't I buy this? Like, why am I still paying all of these extra points for this shit? You know, and I still don't have access to even like a Land Raider, you know? Which would be perfect considering you can have 20 model count Sisters of Battle squads. You know, like, that would be the perfect thing for a Land Raider.
Yeah, putting them in a fucking Crusader at 60-man carrying capacity, huge. But like I said, I really do feel that Sisters are, you know, before that Codex came out, Sisters of Battle were a fringe Codex that, you know, one or two guys would show up with at a tournament, and you knew that he was either the worst player in the room, or he was a fantastic player that was going to finish, you know, above average because he's played that army since they fucking came out. He knew it. He knew how to win games. But the codex just isn't good enough to stand toe-to-toe with some of the top ones. So, I mean, you know, on that vein, I think if we were to even look at, you know, who the top codexes, you know, in the quote-unquote metagame are for 40K tournaments, I still think that your top three are going to be Guard, Wolves, and flip a coin depending on how you feel between Blood Angels or just Codex Space Marines.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
But the point being that three of them are Space Marines.
Yeah. Because, like, that's the thing is, like, I would say if you're going to say top four, you can say Wolves, Blood Angels, Codex Marines, and Imperial Guard.
Yeah.
Hands down. Pick whatever order. I know, you know, fuck, there are arguments online all the time about this. I don't give a shit. But I would definitely say that if you were looking to build a competitive tournament army, one that has a legitimate chance at taking best overall, provided your painting scores are up to par and
you're a proper general.
You're a proper general and you're not going to slap your opponent in the face. I hear that happens from time to time. You know, provided you have the skills to actually win a tournament and you're not just living the pipe dream. But provided you had the skills, I would honestly say that pick one of those four books and you're in good shape. You know, right. All the other books you can go through and they have issues in one way or the other.
Right.
That's not to say that if you play one of the other books, you can't win a tournament. Honestly, I would put Dark Eldar as number five. I mm-hmm. think they're just outside of there for the reasons I said earlier, being they have no super reliable anti-tank. Because that's the thing. Dark Eldar will rape the fuck out of anything outside of a vehicle thanks to all the poison shots they have, especially with Venoms throwing up 12 poison shots a turn,
yep.
Witches, warriors with their poison splinter rifles and cannons, you know, things like that. So it's just like they have all the ability in the world to make, you know, your life a living hell if you are out of a vehicle. But they're just too unreliable at getting you out of that vehicle. And that's why I put them at number five and not higher. But yeah. That's the big thing with how I see the state of 40K, you know, these days. And even when you look at it, look at all of the major tournaments that are happening. You know, like I said, Tony Kapach with his Space Wolves has won this year alone Adepticon and Nova Open. I can't remember who won War Games Con, so I'm not going to talk about it. But, you know, again, those are the three biggest tournaments in North America, and Wolves have won two of them.
Yeah. So back to the sisters. I think that where do we kind of see this going in the future? Because I don't think we're going to see anyone else playing these. And I have heard from a few people who previously played Sisters of Battle who have basically said they're just going to shelve them at this point until we actually get a proper new codex for them, which is perfectly understandable. I don't think that anybody's going to complain about that. What needs to happen for people to kind of look at this quote-unquote codex is that it really is there just to give you something new to play with. And I think that that was the big thing that I took away from it after, you know, a month has kind of gone by, is that for people who play Sisters of Battle and who have been playing them for a very long time, all this is really giving you is something else to play with. It's kind of giving you a bit of a different challenge, maybe giving you a reason to take a couple of different units or not just spam the same units over and over again. But I think everyone does agree that it's just not as competitive as it needs to be. And unlike the Dark Eldar the Grey Knights, it doesn't really settle itself anywhere. Whereas the Dark Eldar are too balanced in this edition, and the Grey Knights are too overbalanced in one particular aspect. The Sisters of Battle have no balance at all. Like, there's nothing there. Like, you can't say, like, oh, they're too much shooting, or they're too much this close combat, or they're too much this with armor. Mm-hmm. They're combat, shitty shooting, and shitty armor.
Oh, like, you're absolutely right.
There's really nothing there. Like, there's no balance as opposed to having balance or being overbalanced. And it's strange to have three codexes that come out in a row be so dramatically different.
Well, I think that has a lot to do with the authoring. I mean, Phil Kelly did the Dark Eldar book, and you know, I can't claim that he's a master of balance, because I mean his other fifth edition contribution is Space Wolves, and the fact that they were what, the third codex out of the gates for fifth edition, so they're, you know, they're one of the first fifth edition codexes, and they're still able to stand the test of time as one of the best. You know, you can't look at that and say, oh, that, you know, they're just one of the best because they're just so balanced.
Yeah.
No,
well, that's bullshit. Not the case.
You know, that is clearly not the case, Long Fangs.
Fucking John Long.
Okay. Nice.
No, but I mean, that, like, that's the thing is really, you know, for your question of what's the future of the Sisters, I would say it's one of two things. They're either looking at just completely squatting, you know, giving the army the squat treatment. And this is just that step down the road of saying, you know, we're going to release new rules. No new models at all. We're not even going to release the old ones in fine crap, for fuck's sake. Like, you know,
yeah,
you know, they're not doing anything to the model range. And they released a codex that is so fucking awful that no one but the diehards of the diehards would be compelled to play it at either a tournament or even a vet's night. Because they also did their damnedest to suck all of the character out of the army. Because at least the old faith mechanics, with the old martyrdom, with all of those things, the army had a ton of flavor. And, you know, it was always a joy to play against. And it was one of those armies that, like I said, I always wanted to play. And what always kept me from it was the three poses of Sister. And the fact that at 11 points per model, you needed a shitload of those Sisters to really, you know, build an effective list. And I just didn't want to paint the same three models over and over. But now I look at these rules and I have no desire to play them. Mm-hmm. I would never want to play them ever in a million years, because there's no character. There's really no fluff, because I mean, really, this White Dwarf Codex just released rules, so, and they pulled the Witch Hunters Codex, so now there's literally no fluff on the Sisters of Battle in all of the Warhammer 40,000 universe.
Right.
You know, if you're a new player getting into it. So like I said, they're either looking at completely getting rid of them, or maybe what you said, you know, we'll just give the old players new rules so we can say we have no third edition codexes when we turn the clock to sixth ed. And when we get around to it, we'll give them the Dark Eldar treatment.
Right. Well, I mean, Jess Goodwin, I mean, he's said on multiple occasions now that they are modeling new Sisters of Battle models. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we know that something is in the works for them. I don't know if they're going to abandon that. I'm not going to say I would be terribly surprised if they did abandon it, but I don't think that they should, just because that would be one less non-Space Marine army. That's a big thing for me. I don't even care anymore with Warhammer 40,000. Like, if they get rid of the Black Templars and they're just like, oh, they're not there anymore, I don't care. They get rid of the Imperial
Dark
Fists
Angels.
Or the Dark Angels, I don't care. They go, I could care less. But if, like, you all of a sudden just said, like, you know what? We're just going to phase out Necrons instead of working on them. I mean, that would just be a travesty. Obviously, they're not doing that, but I'm just kind of doing that, saying that to make the point there. All right. So in terms of the roundup, I think that there's some very interesting changes with Warhammer 40,000. I think anyone who listens to the show or has listened to it for the past year knows that our view of Warhammer 40,000 has kind of steadily gone downhill. We have very, very high hopes for the future, because this is definitely the game that we both got started into. It's what drew our attention. And even to this day, when we talk about the fluff and the fiction and Black Library and things of that, boy, it just grabs you. Like, it's so, so good. It's where our love lies. So we're very, very hopeful for the future and for 6th edition. But that being said, let's kind of move on to the stupidity check for the show and start wrapping it up here. Nathan, what do you got for us?
You know, what I have is something that I saw with the new, you know, Manowar, but not Manowar. Dreadfleet. Yeah, like I said, I'm just going to call it Manowar, but not Manowar. You know, it was one of the things that was on the Games Workshop site is the moment they released it, they did their whole stupid blog post and they were just like, hey, look, everybody, look how amazing Manowar is. You know, and look at all the products we've released. It's just like, to play Manowar, really all you need is you need this, you need that. And look, we came out with this stupid, shitty tie-in novel. And that is my stupidity check. Because if you actually look at Games Workshop for the last, let's say 3 years, they have been releasing shitty tie-in novels that nobody reads because they're shitty tie-in novels for all of their major releases. Storm of Magic had three shitty tie-in novels. This one has one. There's an Island of Blood shitty tie-in novel. There's, I think, two Assault on Black Reach. And the funniest thing about this is, you know, you look at Black Library, which is literally the novel division of Games Workshop. I mean, this is these are the people that release novels based on the fluff and in the universes. Black Library has nothing to do with the shitty tie-ins. You cannot buy a single one of them from the Black Library site.
Right.
And that's why I just have to say it's a failed stupidity check, because really, how many people are buying them? You know, like, because yeah. When I'm buying shopping for Black Library, and I'll be honest, I would say that 90% of all of my reading now is Black Library, with that last 10% being made up of comic books and the occasional, you know, fiction or nonfiction, non-Black Library novel. So it's just like I consume a metric ass load of Black Library materials. And every single time I see a shitty tie-in novel, I just laugh. I will never read it. And I know I'll never read it because I know that it is a steaming pile of shit. Yeah. It's the same way that when you see that Toy Story 3 just came out in theaters and you see the Toy Story 3 video game on the shelves, you know that that is the single worst video game that you could possibly purchase right now because it's a shitty tie-in video game.
Oh, and hey. Here's a trivia. Let's see how much you know. What is the single worst video game ever made in the last 10 years? Well, 20 years.
Oof. Single worst?
Single worst video game.
Oh.
I had a conversation with somebody about this. And I'm sorry we're getting off topic. Hey, it's a Warhammer. It's a gaming show. Shut the fuck up. Okay, so Nathan, where is it? You had to have played it. I think everyone had to have played it at any given point. I'll give you a clue. It's for the Nintendo 64.
Oh, for the 64? Was it StarCraft for the 64? Because that was a stinker. Take a keyboard and mouse control system and put it on a shitty analog controller?
It was kind of innovative, though, because at least then you had the analog stick on the 64. No. Worst video game released in the last 10 years was the Superman for the Nintendo 64.
Ooh, Superman was...
Gameplay consisted of purple skies because they could not get the proper colors for the skies right before release. So the skies were purple, and it was a free-form game where you would fly around Metropolis, and all Superman would do to stop the criminals was fly through golden rings.
Yeah.
It didn't even have the graphics quality of Pilot Wings. Like, it was just like purple skies, shitty buildings with no detail, and like there weren't even people walking around on the streets. And if you did see people walking around on the streets, they were just black silhouettes because, again, nothing was – it was the worst video game ever created. Anyways, so yes, I agree. Now, I started reading Black Library stuff years and years and years ago, kind of before they started doing all of the shitty tie-in stuff, which was very, very strange because – well, and unfortunate as well, because there was a very, very long period of time where you could not get Black Library product in the stores. You couldn't even get it in Chapters and Indigo and things of that nature, right? Like, it just, they weren't available. Games Workshop had kind of pushed Black Library away and said, well, you guys make money on your own because you don't sell enough and we need the shelf space. And it took, 6 years before they smartened the fuck up and started selling stuff in the store again?
But even then, I think the only reason they did is Black Library signed that distribution with a lot of the major retailers worldwide. So you could go into your Borders, your Chapters, your Indigo, your whatever, and they would have like two or three full shelves of Black Library books. And it was only after that, because I mean, I remember... when before it was on the shelves, you could mail order Black Library. And I was just like, why would I wait 2 weeks for a book when I could walk across the hall to the bookstore and buy it off the shelf? Like, why the fuck would I buy it from you, Games Workshop? You know, and that was when they decided to put them back into the store. But even by then, it was too late because people either got used to buying them from their local bookstore or buying them online. Like, fuck, now all I do is buy ebooks for my e-reader.
Yeah. Well, but using it as an advertising tool is kind of ridiculous. I think that the funniest thing about using it as an advertising tool is that a good book is always going to be the best advertising tool than a book that's mm-hmm. trying to advertise.
Listen.
What was the book recently that was had the Necrons in it? And it was a bunch of like Necron information.
Oh, I don't know, because I've been catching up on some of the Time of Legends stuff. But, you know, you're absolutely right, though, about it.
I was talking to one of the managers in the Games Workshop, and he was saying that he sells tons of that particular book because it has a lot of details on the Necrons in it. It wasn't built as a advertising book, you know, where they were trying to sell stuff. It really was just a well-written book with like a cool plot and a lot of twists on what you knew as being Necron. And so, boy, people were snapping it up. But like all of, like you said, the books were the Black Reach books and all this kind of stuff. And nobody buying that shit.
No, I've never. And I mean, I remember when I saw the Storm of Magic and the Assault on Black Reach BS in my local GW, I even asked the manager, because he's like us. He reads a lot of the Black Library fiction, and you know, he stays on top of a lot of the really good ones in a lot of the good series. And you know, even he was just like, no, I've never read it. He's like, I own a copy. It's somewhere in my house. I'll probably never read it. You know, and that's exactly what those shitty tie-ins are. And, you know, on that, you're right. Well-written Black Library is phenomenal advertising, because I can honestly say that by about the midway point of any Gaunt's Ghost book and for about a month afterwards,
yes.
All I want to do is build a guard army.
Yes.
Because, you know, you just read it, you're just like, this shit is amazing. You know, so I'm halfway through Salvation's Reach. And again, I'm at that point where I'm like, I should really do a guard army.
Yep. And I do it every time I read Sifis Kane, or every time I read the Gaunt's Ghost books, is I always, halfway through the book, I'm just like, I kind of lean over and look at my Talaren army, and I'm just like, ooh, I should get that shit done. But yeah, okay. Well, that's Jaded Gamercast for this week. Hope you guys enjoyed. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.